Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 13th of July. And just as I went on the air, there are three people washing the windows outside our studio. I have always said we have to interview somebody who does that for a living because I don't know how they do it. They are not nervous, but I am. Not about the show, just about I got to keep my eyes away from it. It scares me. All right, here we go. Dante Chinney, a longtime guest of this program, is with us the first hour of our program today. Dante has been a journalist for some 20 years. He's worked at Newsweek, the Christian Science Monitor, and the Project for Excellence in Journalism. He's also written for the Washington Post magazine, The Economist, The New Republic. He has put together this really interesting program. He works now with Patchwork Nation, and they have an entirely different way of looking at the electorate. Skip the red state, blue state. It's much more complex than that. His roots are firmly planted in the industrial Midwest, grew up outside Detroit, and went to college at Michigan State University, where he studied journalism and history. And the center is exploring the country through the lens of 12 community types of Patchwork Nation. He has written about Wisconsin and will probably have something to say about the elections that took place yesterday. He's going to be in Wisconsin on Friday examining the electorate in the various counties in the days before the real primary or the real elections, recall elections, which will take place soon. He also had a very interesting column about this unemployment rate, which keeps going up. Unemployment was not up everywhere in Patchwork Nation, he says, but it was up in the places that it cannot afford to be, the three wealthiest county types. So we'll talk with him about that. We'll have phone calls interested, you know, in your response to the recall. Did you vote yesterday if you were in a certain district? Why did you vote? What did you think of the outcome? Are you upset about the money that was spent on this? Do you think that it was a good idea to give everybody more time to examine what the issues are? Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Good morning, Dante.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad. I'm headed out there soon, but out in Massachusetts right now at my in-laws, and it's hot here. So
is it?
Cool for me when I get there.
No, it won't be. I'm sorry. It's going to be real hot again come Friday. You should be here now. It's beautiful today. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I should have planned it differently, but it's it'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
Ready.
What will you be looking at when you come back?
Well, I've been curious for a while and watching the recall elections there, trying to figure out basically where the voter sentiment is and some of the stuff you're just asking, how people feel about the elections generally, and obviously, you know, if they're leaning one way or the other. So I'm going to be stopping in three different state senate districts where they're having recall elections in three, according to Patchwork Nation, three different types of community. I'm kind of curious to see if there's a difference of opinion about what should happen next. And I'm going to head out to Washura County, which is out a ways, and then Fond du Lac, and then finish up in Milwaukee.
Okay. Well, come and see us.
I'm going to be there.
All right. Well, we'll take you out somewhere. I don't know where, but somewhere. I don't know if you can't cover it as closely because the news reports have been filled with the primary elections that took place yesterday in Wisconsin. We're really in uncharted territory in this state. Nine recall elections, these fake primary elections that took place yesterday, in which there was pretty big voter turnout in some places, not so big in others. No surprises. The real Democrats won in their primaries,
right,
although some had thought maybe there would be an upset, but there wasn't. Just your general thoughts on where we stand. This is historic in Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, I actually think you guys might be at the forefront of something that ends up being very, very important to the national electorate, which is there are places in the state, and I'm going to be going to some of them, where there aren't a lot of people, and they tend to be a lot of small towns, and they have actually tended to be somewhat, you know, Republican in their views on things. But the question is, when you start hitting at these public sector unions, which is what the governor there has done, and with the hope of saving money, you end up hitting a lot of those places because a lot of those places have a lot of public sector jobs. So I think what we may start to see in these recall elections is the turning away in some of these places from not Republicanism in general, but in this particular strategy, in this particular approach. And that could have very far-reaching effects for the natural, for the national electorate in 2012. That's what we're going to find out. But you guys are a very interesting test case to me. I'm very eager to get out there.
I know that you looked at the county types that saw the Democrats making the biggest gains in the fairly recent Supreme Court vote here in relation to the gubernatorial vote. What did you see when you examined that?
Yeah, the thing that was some of the most interesting stuff in there was you had big Democratic increases in these places, and they are community types. Patchwork Nation, we use all this demographic data to break counties into 12 different types of place. And you saw big in that Supreme Court election, you saw big increases in the Democratic vote margin in places that are called service worker centers. These are kind of small, fairly rural, not necessarily agriculture, but rural, small-town communities. And also these places called emptying nests. And those places actually they tend to be a bit more urban, a bit more densely populated, but similar in other ways. And the fact that you saw that, I mean, increases in those places in Democratic margin of 5 to 6% on average, that's significant because those places have tended to be fairly Republican. And if that trend continues, it should be worrying for the GOP. That should be a little troubling to them.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is that there just hasn't been something like this in the history of this country. There haven't been many recall elections, and we've got 9 of them coming up.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. And I do think, you know, I was just reading this morning that somebody, I guess Micah Marshall's website, Talking Points Memo, they had something about the increase. There is a big, in the 3 Democrats who are up to be recalled, They've looked at the money coming in, and the Democrats have really outraised the Democrat incumbents have outraised the Republican challengers. That's actually fairly significant too, because you would think you get a lot of excitement if you're going for a recall effort. You'd think there'd be a lot of excitement about throwing people out of office. That was actually somewhat significant. You are in uncharted territory, and you know the country is just going through a period right now where we're. And I emphasize this a lot in the blog I write on Patchwork Nation, that, look, we're going through a moment in history here that everybody is not going to like. Most people aren't going to like where we're headed, and it's going to be it's going to be really troubling for, like, maybe the next decade, at least another...
The next decade? You've got to be kidding me.
Well, I mean, look, everybody wants everything to go back to the way it was. And that's just not going to happen. I mean, it's not going to happen because we're at a different moment in history, and there are other rising economic powers, and those rising economic powers mean that people are going to get paid less. We're going to have less. People are going to have lower incomes. A lot of the country, people are going to have lower incomes, and you know. What does that mean for politics? I'm not sure yet, and I don't think anybody's sure yet. And it's impossible to know yet because we're going to be going through a big period of readjustment here. I've stressed over and over again that this isn't about the recession. Recession was awful. It just horrendous. But that's not the story. The story is the recession is the last gasp of 30 or 40 years of economic restructuring that we're going through now. And so the anger in the electorate now is, why can't things be the way they were? Or basically, we want it all. We want to be able to make more money again. We want to get rid of this deficit. We want all this stuff. And it's just that was a peculiarity of a moment in history that was a post-war era in the United States that is just post-World War II that extended for another 20, 30 years.
Well,
is just gone now.
A lot of people are saying, and you wrote a very interesting piece about this, they want a job. This unemployment rate is just so darned high. And I was interested in your recent piece on unemployment, not up everywhere in the Patchwork Nation, but you write that it was up in the places that it can least afford to be. Tell us about that.
Yeah, and I think that's why fixing the economy that everybody wants done and everybody has ideas about how to do it isn't really going to be easy. The reason why there are these places, the wealthiest communities in Patchwork Nation, these places we call the wealthy suburban areas, the money burbs, the industrial metropolis, those are the big cities and also kind of the wealthy inner ring suburbs around them. And then these boom towns, these are places that experienced a lot of the housing growth in the first half of the last decade and then got a lot of the crash. it's important that those, and it's not that these other places don't matter. It's not that people who have less money don't matter. They matter a lot, and we can't turn our backs on them. But those wealthy places, two-thirds of the U.S. economy is consumer spending, okay? If those people don't spend in those places, the economy just will not go. I don't care what anybody says about their plans for turning it around or fixing it, or they've got this plan, or we simply have to, you know, bring stability back to the tax structure by lowering tax rates. None of that is going to work if people don't spend money. And I know the idea is, well, but if we lower their tax rates, they will spend money. Yeah, maybe. I mean, we'll see, because we may try that. But, you know, if those people don't spend money, the economy won't go. And I think there are two big reasons why the economy is not really going to take off anytime soon. One is manufacturing. A lot of those jobs we lost are just gone.
Right.
They're just gone. And they are good-paying jobs with good benefits, and there are a lot of people that was their rung up in the economy, up the ladder, and it's gone. And the other thing is construction. Home construction, which has really got us through a lot of the last decade, that's going to be gone for a while. And it may be gone, and when it comes back, it's not going to be anything like it was. Without those two kind of legs to the U.S. economy, unemployment is going to stay high, and as long as unemployment stays high, that means consumer spending is going to stay low, and as consumer spending stays low, the economy isn't going to pick up.
What about stimulus money? Have you had a chance to examine how the stimulus money, which is now about spent, helped the economy at all? Did it?
Well, we've done some stuff on it, and one of the things we found with particularly the highway money that was pumped in through the stimulus, it went to a lot of places that really didn't need it quite so much. But, you know, look, a lot of that money went to places that did need it, and they went to some of these, particularly the big city communities. There was an interesting study that was just done by Moody's Analytics that showed, which is a financial research firm, that showed something like $2 out of every $10 spent in the last couple of years has been one way or another associated with the government. Now, some of that is obviously Social Security and things like that. But a lot of that was this stimulus money. And if you basically were kicking that leg out. We can't just keep stimulating the economy forever. It's true. So that's gone, and that's going to be a drag on the economy. The one thing that really concerns me, actually a lot of things really worry me right now, but one thing that is really worrying is this idea that we'll just cut government and that's how we're going to get this budget back in line, and we'll just cut government spending. You know, look, people don't understand how big the public sector is in making the economy go. And we're going to have to cut money out of it. That's absolutely right. But, I mean, now is maybe not the time to do it. Because this recovery, I guess, like I said, it's going to be bad for a while. Things aren't going to suddenly get better, and people should be prepared for that.
Mm-hmm. Can we learn anything from what you found? The small town service worker center counties and the aging emptying nests did see a small decline in unemployment. Is that meaningful?
Well, we'll find out. I actually think June's the unemployment numbers, the way you get them county by county, lag. So the numbers we're looking at are from May. Now, I think that bump that we saw, how unemployment was actually lower in those places, has to do with the fact that a lot of those places hold tourism. This is not Disney World, but it's the place you go to the summer lake, right? The place you go in the lake in the summer, and those kind of tourist towns. And they hired up. They kind of booted up for the summer because they're expecting people to come. The question is, with these numbers that we're seeing now, how the unemployment rate is high in these places that have them that are wealthier, those small towns that have tourism, they have it because the rich people, not the rich people, the people with more money are going there for vacation. Okay, if the unemployment rate gets higher and higher in those wealthy places, this is the other side of trickle down. Okay, this is the bad side of trickle down economics, where when those wealthy people have less money to spend because they're scared about their unemployment situation, that means those small towns that basically live and die on tourism are going to see less money. And my question is, when we get the June figures, which we should get in the next, I don't know, 2-3 weeks here, I fear that we're going to see a bump in unemployment in those service worker centers and the emptying nest. And that would really be disconcerting.
Dante Chinney is our guest with Patchwork Nation. He's going to be in Wisconsin looking at three counties, Washera, Fond du Lac, and Milwaukee, in the prelude to the recall elections, which will take place in just a few weeks. So here's what's on the table this hour. Of course, you will want to have a chance to respond to what happened yesterday, if it was at all meaningful. The primary elections that took place, where all the Democrats, the real Democrats, won in the elections yesterday. Where do you judge the sentiment of Wisconsin right now? The Republicans usually turn out strongly for races. Do you think that there is any chance at all that Democrats will pick up 3 Senate seats, which of course would change the political fabric in the state of Wisconsin, or does that seem unlikely? Did you go to vote in the primary yesterday? And if so, why did you do that? And then this large question, which Dante says, you know, it's kind of a depressing thought that we're in a decade of pretty tough economic times. He also has done thorough investigation of unemployment and looking county by county. They're looking at counties all over the United States to find out what people are really thinking and how the electorate may be changing their voting patterns. So here's our number. Our lines will get crowded, I guarantee you. Call in early. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us by email, then that's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dante Cini, our guest, author of a fascinating book, Our Patchwork Nation, The Surprising Truth About the Real America, the 12 community types that make up our nation. Since the run-up to the 2008 presidential election, Dante has been the correspondent for the award-winning Patchwork Nation Project, a collaboration among the Christian Science Monitor, PBS NewsHour, and PBS member stations. All right, let's go to phone calls. Rich in Appleton is our first caller. Hi, Rich.
Hello, good morning, and thank you for the show.
Sure.
I'm calling to find out. I called when a lot of the stimulus money was being put into the system. I had called back at that point and was asking the question, what would happen if they wrote the stimulus checks directly to the people, a portion of it, some of it, whatever, and let them infuse the economy with the money instead of coming from the top down?
I think it's, you know, it's an interesting idea, and in a way they are still doing that now, because what they've done is, you know, they've there's a tax holiday still for this year, withholdings. Your withholdings are going to be slightly lower this year, so your checks are actually slightly bigger because the federal government is not taking quite so much out of them. But the idea of immediately doing that, and that's been done in the past, obviously, it's not a bad idea. The problem with it is, and it's not really a problem, this is just the depth of the hole we're in. People were in such crisis in terms of their situation with their debt, personal debt, that the concern was if we just wrote checks to them, they weren't going to be that big. They were going to be, they'd be decent size, maybe a couple $1,000. And a lot of that would just go to people trying to pay down their debt, which they have to do, but it's not a really good way to stimulate the economy. The way to stimulate the economy is people to spend. This is just the fundamental problem we have with getting the economy going right now. People are scared. People have a lot of debt. So they're just not spending, and the idea of trying to give it to build roads and stuff like that is, you know, and I do think that I actually think that's a pretty good way to spend money, because ultimately, the money flows into the hands of the construction workers, and you get something out of it, right? You get a road, and ultimately that road helps spur commerce in some way, hopefully anyway, you know, or stuff that needs to get done, bridges that need to get fixed, things like this. I don't think it would have been a bad idea, and I just think in the end there's still a lot of stuff we need to do in this country, because we've just been ignoring stuff for the last 20, 30 years in terms of our infrastructure. But I would not be surprised if we see more of that somehow, cuts or what they're talking about doing, even on this deficit, you know, the debt ceiling thing, is possibly eliminating loopholes in the tax structure, but ultimately they would yield lower rates overall, and that would help people have a little bit of money to go spend. But I think even that, the idea of them going to spend, they need to feel safe and secure before people spend money, because right now the idea is, I could go buy a car, but I don't know if I'm going to have a job in 6 months. So you know what? I'm going to hold on to my money for a while. And I just think that that's a problem that's hard to get past.
Well, that's a sad state of affairs, isn't it? I'd buy a car, but I don't know if I'll have a job.
I still have friends back in Michigan, and I post stuff, you know, on my Facebook page. And I hear comments from them, like, you know, I heard from a friend I knew from high school, you know, yesterday saying, you know, I lost my job 6 months ago and I can't find another job. And I just tell him, you know, I feel awful for him. But there's so many people going through that right now. And, you know, even if he, you know, like, say he needs a new car or he needs, you know, he's in the situation where he's not, and he doesn't have a job. There are other people that have jobs that are worried about losing them. And they're just not going to spend right now. They're scared. And I mean, you know, I don't want to say they're scared with good reason, but, you know, it's not completely ridiculous to be concerned about what's happening.
Thank you very much, Rich, for the call. Let's go to Mariah from Reedsburg. Hi, Mariah.
Hi there. Excuse me. You asked, did I vote yet, or did we vote yesterday? Yes, I did. And I voted because I thought it was very important that the Democrats get out, because I think the Democrats were complacent and didn't bother getting out to vote in 2010. I think that's one of the reasons for the huge numbers. But everybody talks about the debt ceiling. I'm afraid it's not going to be raised. And when you talk about, I don't know if I should buy a car or not, I couldn't possibly buy a car. I couldn't spend. I have no extra money. I have too many bills. And I don't think that the government understands this, the senators, the people in the House. I don't think any of them understand that. And I think things are going to get worse, because I don't think the debt ceiling is going to be raised. And I think that there's going to be more poor people and less rich people, or, you know, the rich people are going to stay right where they're at, and there's going to get to be lower and lower numbers of middle class. But I think if the Democrats get out and vote and let them know we don't want it the way the Republicans are doing, I think that, you know, it's going to send a message. Thank you.
Thank you, Mariah.
Well, I do think that what you have there that you didn't have in 2010 is, I think in 2010 you had a very demoralized Democratic voting base. And I think that two things are happening in 2011. One is those demoralized Democratic voters have their dander up, and they are not happy, just as Republicans weren't happy in 2009, 2010. And they're starting to vote. And then I think the other thing that's happening is there are people that used to vote Republican maybe who just aren't really pleased with, in Wisconsin I'm talking now, with the direction of some things, with some of the things there. To the broader point about the middle class, look, this idea about saving the middle class is not just, it's not just like, oh, we should help the middle class because they're the middle class and they're great. It's not like that. We have to have a middle class in this country or the economy won't function. And I don't understand how people don't understand that. And it, people are like, well, you know, we should give tax cuts to the wealthy because they create jobs. It's like, well, I don't know. The data really don't show that. They really don't, you know. And the bottom line is, if you don't have a middle class in an economy where two-thirds of the GDP is based on consumer spending, it won't function. The U.S. economy functions by people going to Target and Walmart every weekend and buying a lot, okay? If they buy less, the economy won't pick up. That's why we have to. Saving the middle class is not just like saving the idea of America, or the American dream, or any of those things, which are all important. It's more important than that, even. The economy simply won't function without a middle class. We have to have a middle class, a vibrant middle class, or this thing won't work.
Thanks, Mariah, for the call. Do you have any figures from your studies on what has happened to the economy as a result of public sector layoffs? There have been many of them the last couple months. And the middle class in the public sector losing some of their, disposable income, paying more for their health care benefits, for their pensions. What effect is that having on the economy?
Well, we don't have that data yet because it lags a bit, right? We'll be at the county level. We'll be getting more and more of that over the next year or so. And even I think it's going to be interesting to see differences between 2000 and 2010, because you'll have once all the census data comes out, because I know everybody thinks the census data is out yet. It's not. There's a lot of numbers there, and it takes a while to crunch through it all. So we hope that by fall we'll have some really meaningful things to look at there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're right. Look, and I think we did do a big piece. I did a big piece along with the demographer I used to work with on this project, Jim Gimple, for the Atlantic magazine, back in April, and we looked at median family incomes in 1980 and 2010. And the most disturbing thing we found is that among these 12 county types that we've recognized, six of them saw their incomes drop in real terms. That's in real terms. That means adjusted for inflation, people are making less. In six of these 12 community types, people were making less in 2010 than they were in 1980. That's not good. And that's something we should all be concerned about. And actually, these places that employ a lot of where the public sector is a large part of the employment, which is again these service worker centers and some of these emptying nests, these aging emptying nest communities, those were among the places that lost.
Here's an email from Bonnie. As a Catholic, I vote pro-life, but the economic stance of pro-life candidates seems to be detrimental to the majority of those here in Wisconsin. Have the Republican and Democratic parties used complex and modern sampling methods to slice and dice the electorate so that no real progress happens?
Wow, that's depressing. I think, well, the Democratic and Republican parties do slice and dice the electorate to try to pitch messages to them that matter. But I really do think what's happened right now is that the parties are just at stalemate. I mean, and they keep hoping that this next election, well, we'll wait for 2012, and then there'll be an election, and that'll decide what direction the country's going to go in. It doesn't work that way is the problem, because we did that in 2008. Remember, we had the big election to decide which direction the country was going to go in, and then we voted, and then, you know, really what proceeded to happen was nothing. Because what happens is, as soon as that party gets in power, elections are about big ideas and concepts and speeches, and it's really and you come out and you're all energized, and then comes the muddy work of governing, and eventually what happens is, once one party gets in power, the other party immediately starts chipping away because they're trying to win back the next election. So even when the party in power tries to do stuff that the party out of power knows is probably the right thing to do, they're not going along for the ride because they're thinking about the next election. And my thought about what's wrong with politics in this country right now is it's just solely based on trying to win the next election.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody is thinking about really just what has to get done. Some things just have to get done, like this debt ceiling. It's just like, look, guys, I'm sorry. It has to be raised. People don't like it. I understand that. But you're not going to solve it in the next 2 weeks. Like, solving the problem of the national debt is a massive undertaking, and it's not about cutting a couple $1 billion, right? It's about going in and completely restructuring the way government works and doing some things that, honestly, people aren't going to like.
Donna in Arcadia, hi.
Hi. I want to say, first of all, I really enjoyed the series of articles you did in the Christian Science Monitor about the Patchwork Nation.
Oh, thank you.
And I wish you were coming to Trempealeau County, which is where I live, because I forget how you characterize us. We're either tractor, maybe empty nest, some combination of that.
I'll take a look as we're talking.
We are split 50-50 on most of the issues you're talking about. It's really interesting to talk to my neighbors. There are a lot of farmers. Farmers are doing really well right now because all the prices are high.
Yep.
But we have a lot of government workers, too, who are really upset about the developments over the past few months. And it's like the two sides just aren't talking to one another. And I'm just wondering if I agree with most of what you said. I'm wondering if in this real strong downturn, if there's an opportunity for some sensible, big, bold changes in policy, almost like what President Obama, you know, tried to get going with the $4 billion cuts, some far-reaching ideas about how to restructure Medicare, for example, so that it doesn't go broke. But tax reform, above all things, I think that people don't understand that as far as income taxes go, we are paying low, low rates at the moment. And everyone seems outraged about how we can't pay any more taxes. But I keep thinking, yes, we can. We can pay more taxes. And maybe what would be a good thing would be to eliminate property taxes in favor of income taxes or something so that people, you know, so the people who are making the income are paying the taxes.
Yeah, well, I would say I wouldn't want to get rid of property taxes, because ultimately property taxes do tend to hit, generally tend to hit the wealthier part of the population. And I do think that I know that people don't like to hear that. But to be honest, look, wealthy people have the most invested in the current state of situation, the current state of affairs in the United States. They really do, because they've won out in the system as it is. So I think that actually, they actually owe more into the system, because to be honest, they want to maintain the system. The poor really don't care, right? So they, if you junk the system tomorrow, they'd be like, I don't care. This isn't working for me. So I wouldn't want to get rid of them completely, property taxes, obviously. But to the point of some of the stuff you're saying, these rural agricultural communities, tractor country, which I call them, and Patchwork Nation, which we call them Patchwork Nation, have really not been affected by the recession. It is amazing. They've really, and it's because their economies, as you say, function in a different way. They've kind of they've been lucky enough to skate through a lot of the really hard times here. And then they got hit in the 80s, obviously very badly, but they've done pretty well so far. Trumpolo, just looking on my website, it's patchworknation.org. You can go and check out the state of Wisconsin and look at all the counties on there. It's an emptying nest, and a lot of those emptying nest counties do have a lot of tractor country in them because those tractor country counties tend to be older. And I babbled so much I don't even remember the question now.
Well, let me direct it to when she wanted a breakdown. She described her county as being at the point where nobody can talk to each other. You're on one side or the other, which seems to be what's happening everywhere. In Minnesota, they shut down the government. People are out of work, people who need services. In Washington, one side's on one end, one side's on the other. They meet every day, but they don't get anywhere. Well, it's just incredible. It's everywhere.
Well, it's really, the thing that was the most depressing yesterday I saw was that Mitch McConnell, who is the Senate majority leader, or Senate minority leader, sorry, the Democrats still control the Senate, said that he just doesn't think they can get anything done on the debt ceiling as long as Obama is president. It's just like, wow, have we really reached the point that they're just that we just can't play with each other anymore? We can't talk anymore and negotiate stuff.
We can't talk.
The atmosphere is so toxic that I think that's the point we're at, and it's very disheartening. It really is.
It sure is. Donna, thank you very much. Maybe you'll reconsider and just pay a little visit to Trempealeau County when you're in the area, Dante. Let's go next to Louie in Wausau. Hi, Louie.
Good morning.
Hi.
I've just learned that all new job creation, all net new job creation, is in startup companies less than 5 years old, 80% of those jobs in the first year, and that companies older than 5 years are net job eliminators, or, in the words of a certain political party, job killers. This means that investment by the rich and by large corporations has the effect of eliminating jobs. This is done mostly through productivity increase. But I wonder why we don't hear more about that, why that the Speaker of the House continues to say that we don't want to raise taxes on job creators, when in fact he's talking about job eliminators. That's my comment and question.
All right, Louie.
Well, that's a really fascinating statistic, actually, that the idea that companies older than 5 years are net job eliminators. That wouldn't surprise me, because obviously companies older than 5 years include a lot of very big companies. And you're right, those companies achieve gains in their bottom line by productivity increases, and a lot of times it's automation, manufacturing, for instance, or outsourcing, I suppose, in some ways. Especially when you think of call centers and things like that. The new jobs are created among these very small companies. And I do think that that's one thing that I really cannot take in the debate. I'm not singling out any party here. I'm not piling on Republicans or saying yay Democrats, because both parties have a lot of problems. But this idea that the rich people create jobs in this country, just I really, honestly, it's just not true. It really isn't, I'm telling you. The idea that how do rich people create jobs? Well, they invest. Okay, let's say that they you give them a big capital gains tax cut, and they use it and they invest in businesses, and that's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. But where are the businesses based, right? And I'm not saying, it's not like we should put something in the law that says they have to invest in American businesses, because you can't do that. This is the way the system works. They invest, and when they invest, a lot of those companies are companies that are multinationals, and you invest. Even if you invested in General Motors right now, as I tell people a lot of times, you know, General Motors' big growth area is China. And that's not General Motors being unpatriotic. That's General Motors looking out for General Motors' future. There's a huge market it has to tap into over there. And I do think this idea that we do have to get past is this idea that, like, rich people create jobs. And small business, and when you cut, you have to cut taxes on people to make over $250,000 a year, because those are small business owners. Those aren't small business owners, most of them. They really aren't. Small business owners scrape and try to get by, like the caller was saying. They're not wealthy. And I do think that the debate has just gotten really out of whack, and it's not based in reality. And it's that is, you know, we have to find a way to get past that. And I will tell you this, on my blog with Patchwork Nation, I am doing as much as I can, particularly when the election begins in 2012, when we start. My goal is going to be to start playing truth detector, not just on whether or not somebody lied about, you know, what they did 5 years ago or you know, what their stance was on X or Y. I want to look at their policy positions and just kind of take them apart. Because I just think that, you know, a lot of the policy debate we have in this country is not real. It's artificial, and it's taking us down the wrong path. So to the caller, that's a really interesting statistic. Thank you for that, and that's something I want to look into more now.
Here's a related kind of thing from Terry in Deerfield. We're a state and nation of grassroots efforts. Maybe we need another. Some retailers are beginning to put small U.S. flags in their flyers for all products produced in the United States. Dante says the manufacturing jobs will not come back and would like to change that thinking. What if we do develop a grassroots effort? We have transparency in the retail market and buyers can be aware and exercise their right to invest in our own companies. On the other hand, what does the president mean when he says we need to sign more trade agreements? Isn't this part of the problem?
Well, the problem with saying, look, I salute anybody who buys American, and I think it's wonderful, and we should do what we can to help manufacturing in the United States. But the bottom line is, people have less money now, so when they go to the store, they're looking for the bargain. And to be honest, it's just going to cost more to produce things in the United States than it is in other places. Now, some of that is eaten up in transportation costs, right? It might be cheaper to make something in China, but then you still have to ship it here. True, but they make so much less money in China that the product is going to be less expensive, you know. And you can't tell people what to buy. They're going to buy what they're going to buy. And when they don't have money, you know, this is why Walmart does well. Walmart is really about low prices, and that's what people need right now to live, you know, to live the life that we used to live 10, 20, 30 years ago. We need to spend a lot less. So we pay less for a lot of stuff now. And that's the way we keep our standard of living high. If we all start buying more expensive stuff, our standard of living will drop. And it is a choice people can make. I mean, if they say that, no, I don't mind spending the extra money, I'll buy American, I think that's fine. But I think it's good, actually. But I just think you're not going to find enough people to do it because
they don't have as much money.
Right. Yeah. I'm a father with, like, let's say I'm a father with, like, three kids. I need to get shoes for all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much money I have in my budget for shoes. And I'm gonna get the shoe that where the numbers work out for my budget.
Dante Cini is our guest this hour. He does a lot of really interesting work. He has a book and he's got a blog, which is well worth your looking at, patchworknation.org. He's the author of Our Patchwork Nation, The Surprising Truth About the Real America, the 12 Community Types That Make Up Our Nation. It's a project that started in the run-up to the 2008 presidential election, and they have broken down voting patterns, county by county. He's saying the red state, blue state thing is way off the mark, that people are voting very differently based on counties within each state. He's coming to Wisconsin because, of course, Wisconsin is, well, it may, as he says, hold clues to the 2012 election. The battles that Governor Scott Walker, Democrats, and the public sector unions have laid down markers in a much larger ideological fight that has ramifications for 2012. One of the reasons so many people are looking at the recall elections fairly closely. We haven't had, maybe because you're all on taxes and wealth distribution and jobs, but I am interested in hearing from some of you in the counties where there were recall elections yesterday, if you were motivated to vote, if it didn't make a difference to you, where you think the electorate, I think Dante would be interested in that as well, where you think the electorate is right now in the state of Wisconsin. Is there still a lot of anger? Does it look as though it may favor the Democrats in these recall elections? Republicans, on the other hand, elected Scott Walker and the assembly and have a lot of supporters and do vote. So what do you think? Where are you on all of that? We'd like to hear those responses as well. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, education reform. Our guest is the author of a piece in the New York Times Sunday Magazine, and it is titled, No Seriously, No Excuses. will essentially be talking about what the barriers are to student learning posed by conditions of poverty. Two more phone calls. Don in Madison. Thanks for waiting. Hi.
Good morning. I really commend the book that this man is, of which he was a co-author. It describes several different cultures, regional cultures in the United States, and in connection with it, with his theories about regional culture, I'd like to mention David Hackett Fisher in another book, sort of a prelude to Our Patchwork Nation. The other book is called Albion Seed. But at any rate, I'm calling about federal expenditures, and half of them, which seem to be expenditures made by the Department of Defense, which are intrinsically destructive expenditures, and I advocate for a change in that sort of stuff from destructive expenditures to something that's constructive. If we were to make the same investment here in the United States in parks, education, infrastructure, we'd be an awful lot better off than we are now.
Dante,
what do you think?
I would say that I think it's the caller raises a very important point, which is, you know, this long-term problem we have with spending in the country is not about these programs that are being cut right now. They're about three things, really. They're about defense, Social Security, and Medicare. Those are the things we have to figure out what we're going to do with if we're really going to do anything about this budget. I also think that the one thing the caller is saying is really true. It's just absolutely true. It's like I've looked at this problem for a long I've been thinking about this now for the last couple of years about, like, what would I do? I mean, I will never run for office, I assure you. But if I
oh, why not?
Office, what would I do? You know, the only thing that, honest to God, it really seems to me the government can do to help the economy grow, really, it has to plow money into education, and to some extent to infrastructure, because look, the world is changing, and the only way we're going to be able to compete, we're not going to be able to compete for those lower, or I don't think we want to compete for those lower rung income jobs. There isn't enough money in them. What we need to do, you know, the problem in Washington with a lot of people, even that I know, is they don't see the problems in the economy because they're all very well educated, and they're just like, well, we're losing these manufacturing jobs, but, you know, people can, you know, we have these high-tech skill jobs, and it's like, yeah, but those jobs require a lot of education, you know. It's you know, designing an iPhone and software for it is an extremely complicated task for well-educated people, and we need to have those people, right? If the idea is, well, we're not going to be able to do manufacturing as cheaply as China, then we need to have the other end really taken care of in this country. We need to have an educated populace that can do the jobs that earn the money. And then we still have some other things to figure out, but
But Dante, we can't even agree on how to educate. Is it voucher schools or charter schools? A lot of state money has been cut to public schools in this state and in other states. We can't agree on that. What's the best way to educate? How can we do it when you get full measure for the dollar on this?
I know, and I do think that the one thing we're going to have in the next 10 years in this country is rocky, as I do think we're going to have some rocky times, is eventually there's going to be just people are going, there will be serious turnover because the one caller mentioned, this is the moment to kind of seize and do something big to kind of fix the economy. We're just not there yet. And to fix the country, really, we're not there yet, I don't think. I think that at some point people are going to become so frustrated with what's happening and so angry about their economic situation that there will be big changes made. And I'm not even sure they're going to be the right changes, but we will eventually start addressing these big questions. Hmm. We're just not there yet.
Don, thanks. Jim in Eagle River, hi.
Hi, Kathleen, thank you for this guest. I always thought I was too simplistic, but every time I talk to people, I try to tell them that the rich people or businesses don't create jobs. Consumers create jobs. And at a state level, I think what the governor did to public sector workers is only going to be a job-killing thing. In my county and Vilas County, there's going to be a loss of $22 million in income. When you look at small towns, Eagle River, Rhinelander, Three Lakes, and small towns like that, that's a lot of money to remove from those small areas. So I just don't get this idea that, you know, the rich people will create the jobs. Sure, they have the capital to, you know, build the infrastructure, but the consumer is who creates the job by buying goods.
That's absolutely true. In the end, I mean, look, it's not 60 to 70% of the United States gross domestic product comes from consumer spending. People have to buy things. It's very simple. People have to buy things. And we have to find a way to kind of get the economy stable again so people feel comfortable spending. And there's a lot that's going to come along the way that we have to get back to that point, and we're still a long way from there. The one thing the caller said that I think is very true, well, I agree with a lot of what he said, but the one thing that's very true is these small towns are the ones that are really going to take the disproportionate hit from hitting these public sector unions, because a lot of those jobs are public sector jobs. They're county road jobs. They're county school jobs.
Yes.
You know, they're going to take the hit, and they're going to be angry. And you know, it's a question of when it's – again, I think that what's interesting is you guys seem to be at the forefront of this. I think that what's going to happen is this is going to happen a lot of places. It's not that there's some great awakening about the nature of America or anything like that. It's just that people will be angry.
People are angry. There's no doubt about that. People are angry. Thanks very much for the call. Here's an email from Reverend David in Lancaster. I think talking consumer side driven recovery doesn't capture the change dynamics and concentration of wealth and power that now stymies democracy. There are current power brokers who do stand to gain from a financial default of America. I met some of them face to face while conducting a listening session with our political representative of Grant County here in Lancaster. The power brokers have an opportune time to buy up and privatize an economic system that they've been busy breaking. We're getting a pretty strong taste of that here in Wisconsin.
I think he's right. I think there are some people who feel that this is an opportunity for them to score. And I also think that, look, we have definitely seen stratification in economic success in this country and economic purchase power and things like that. And it can't continue. I mean, we have to decide. The thing we have to decide about in this country is, I don't think we can't survive as the country we knew, the country we loved, and the country we want to be, without a middle class. There has to be a middle class in this country. There simply has to be. And if there isn't, we have to find a way to make it. If there isn't a middle class, the other alternative is you have a lot of very wealthy people, and you have a lot of very poor people. And even then, somebody's going to have to pick up the tab, unless you're just going to let poor people starve. Somebody's got to pick up a tab on that. And I just think it's ultimately what they're doing is the idea that they're against kind of building up this middle class the way we need to do it. It's ultimately self-defeating. But I think the person who emailed is the Reverend is right. I think that there are some people who don't see that yet and see this as an opportunity to score points, and they will. They're going to make some money.
Bobby in Stevens Point. Hi.
Hey, good morning. I live in a district where the Republicans could not even get a recall going because there's so many. We're heavily laden. Our working class is public employees for a large part. Right. But my main point I wanted to say was that we're going into a time now where the global capitalists, the rich people, are not interested in creating jobs as much as eliminating them. I think we already touched on that with the hyper-rationalization of productivity. So we're approaching a time when I think, as you say, I think there's going to be a lot of trouble. And I think that our working class and what's left of the middle class are going to have to reorganize politics into a new sort of left-wing, anti-corporate, populist-type movement in which the possibility of a large number of the youth not ever being able to obtain a job, no matter what your skill level, is going to undermine the whole basis for we're going to have to put the existence of capitalism on the table and take a look at it and see if we can really afford it.
We have about 30 seconds, Dante.
Well, it's not 30 seconds. I would say capitalism.
The future
really,
of capitalism in 30 seconds.
It's not going to go anywhere. But I think that the idea that we've ever been a purely capitalist country simply isn't true. This is a mixed economy. there is always government spending, and we have to get the mix right, and we've gotten off track on that. I do think, just quickly, there's a populist movement coming in this country, and I don't know what it's going to look like. The idea that it's going to be a leftist, I don't know if it's going to be a leftist populist movement or rightist populist movement, but populist movements come from disenchantment and anger, and we're going to get one, and just be careful, because populist movements aren't always good. They can be very scary. It's going to be a really interesting couple of years here, and maybe an interesting decade.
Thank you, Jonte, so much. I hope people welcome you with open arms in the state of Wisconsin. I'm sure they will as well. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Jonte Chinney, we'll check in with him again after the recall elections. He'd be good to touch base with. His book is Our Patchwork Nation, The Surprising Truth About the Real America, the 12 Community Types That Make Up Our Nation. And his blog site is and website is patchworknation.org. Well worth your spending time on. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour. Chrissy Pease for on-air production will return following the news.